Hello, our dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Blonde Leading the Blonde with Kelsey and Veronica. And today we have a special guest, Amy.
Hello, listeners. We are very excited to be here today. As we all know, Amy's dad is our number one fan. Amy, would you like to give a little backstory?
Yes, I can regale you with this one. So during the pandemic, when you know people weren't allowed to hang out or see each other as often, Kelsey would send me these voice notes, just you know, telling me about her day or anything. And it kind of got to a point where I was spending so much time with my parents because it's the pandemic, and I would ask her like, "Oh, is this one okay to like listen to in front of my parents?
Is this family friendly?"
And one out of like five, she'd say yes, maybe.
Yeah.
And then on this particular day, Kelsey had a very interesting experience at a BevMo and went to get all-you-can-eat sushi by herself.
It was a great day.
Yeah, it was great.
And it was a family-friendly installation.
I think you did say, like, oh, I got, like, pretty drunk at all-you-can-eat sushi, but then I mean.
Whenever I send.
That's still PG.
Yes.
Whenever I send voice notes to my bestie that lives in New York, I say this audio has explicit content because sometimes she's around her family,
yeah.
Russian family, and I want to give them a heads up. I want to spare their ears from my stories.
So finally, they were just so long and so detailed, and then my dad was just like, Kelsey needs, she's in the wrong profession. She needs to start a podcast because she just like, you know, the way that she tells the story is very captivating. And so ever since then, my dad's never, every time I bring Kelsey up, tell her she needs to start a podcast. So finally, got it done. My dad's your number one listener, so we'll have to have him on sometime.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Does he have stories?
Oh, he's got. I think you guys could do like a cool dad advice episode.
He's very wise.
He's very wise.
Yeah.
Okay,
great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I love your dad. He's such a sweetheart.
He loves Kelsey.
And I love how impressed he is with my storytelling because all these voice notes are just me ranting about ridiculous.
I miss your voice notes. It's because they moved the button.
More.
I know.
I'll
it's because they
more.
Moved the button anymore.
They made it.
It.
There's a barrier to entry now.
Yeah. You use WhatsApp, so you don't know.
Yeah. In WhatsApp, you just press and then you slide up. And
yeah.
You can just go.
Something about the.
It's a lot harder to do now. Yeah. It really is. And I feel like I just don't have as many stories.
That's true. Not a lot has happened.
Because my life is just, I mean, and this is a good thing, I don't get into so many chaotic situations anymore.
I feel like the last wild goose chase you went on was to mail the Poshmark bracelet
mm-hmm.
that you had. And that was the last time you saw
that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. I feel like whenever I have to mail something, there's just a debacle for whatever reason. It shouldn't, like, it's 2024, it shouldn't be this hard to mail something.
But I completely agree. It's like,
maybe this is a business idea. Well, I guess this is literally like what a courier business is, which has definitely existed for probably centuries. But paying someone to mail yourself for you, that's not a new business idea. Good Lord. And now there's a FedEx right down the street, so I really have no excuse now. But like USPS, I have to drive to Chinatown.
Yeah, not ideal.
There's not, like, you'd think, okay. I don't know why USPS does not have an app, and maybe they do, and I'm just an idiot, but I don't know why they don't have an app of locations of mail drop boxes.
Right.
Mm.
Like the blue, like.
Yes.
Like you can just, like,
I multiple times in my life have driven around just looking for one. I shit you not. Like, this is ridiculous.
I doubt they have an app because they're a government.
This is a business idea.
Yeah.
An app where post office drop boxes
sure,
are.
There is one.
Because good Lord.
Something is like the bane of my existence. That's why, like, returning
it's a mission.
Every time, like, I'm like, well, okay, I will say this from a place of privilege that at my law firm we have a mailer that will mail any personal package.
Oh, that's nice.
So
that's
I just
nice.
Literally, like,
okay,
bring
I
my
need to work in Big One.
I didn't want to mention it, but it's
exactly.
A nice perk that I can just, like, do my returns through that.
Whatever you need mailed, Amy will do.
Yeah,
okay, I'll just get it.
Yeah, I'll take it all the way there.
Buy another suitcase because I have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I'll just get it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have these two ladies. We have both of these ladies today on the podcast, and we are using this exclusive chance, because Amy doesn't live in Los Angeles, she lives in Chicago, so we're using this chance of her visiting, so I could drill them about their legal careers and why they decided to move, you know, in this direction of career.
We ask ourselves
that's a great
question.
Every
day.
So, without further ado, I'm going to start with my first question. Where were you And what were you doing when a crazy idea to go to law school came to your mind? And where were you
emotionally, mentally, spiritually? So I will say that when I decided to go to law school, well, it wasn't a definitive decision. It was more so one day I was kind of in the midst of a quarter life crisis. I believe I was 25 or 26. I had been laid off from a job in tech sales, which I really liked. And after like a year or so prior, and after that, I was kind of trying to just find another job in sales, and I ended up in some really horrible situations job-wise, like getting paid. I just didn't know what I was doing, and I was easily bamboozled by the prospect of commissions. And I ended up at this really shady company that was literally like a loan sharking company, and I was selling quote-unquote loans to small business owners, but it was literally selling loans to people that could not afford them and defaulting. Yeah, predatory lending. And it was horrible. And I also made like nothing. So I was in LA completely broke. It was absolutely horrible. Like the dynamic with the boss was weird. It was like the most toxic shit ever. And I was doing that. And then I did some like recruiting as well. And I was really terrible at that. So basically I was just completely lost, did not know what I was doing, was not making good money. I was broke as shit. And I kind of had like a come to Jesus moment of like, what am I doing like with my life basically? And I'm not making enough money. I'm not good. Like I'm not doing something I even remotely like this is not sustainable. And so I knew some people that had gone to law school, were lawyers. And I kind of just was like, well, I can't do math. So I'm not going back to school for like finance
or
anything like this.
During the law school starts.
100%.
Really shitty
at math.
Yeah. And smart.
Yeah, like I'm smart enough to like do something that's semi-valuable. I mean, joke's on me now. But at the time I thought, I'm probably smart enough to do something other than work for a predatory lender.
Yes, you have to hire, yes.
I should probably see
what will hire.
Exactly, like what else is out there? So I, on a whim, just signed up. Like first I had to Google how to go to law school. Because I had no idea. I had no one to, like, the people I knew who went were kind of, like, not people that I was super close with. So it's not like I was going to ask them, what do? You know, I look like a complete moron. So I Googled how to go to law school. Found out that first you have to take the LSAT, which is, like, the SAT to go to law school, essentially. So I basically signed up for the LSAT. And I wasn't really committing to anything other than just signing up for the test. And I thought, okay, let's take the test. Let's see what happens. And at this point, like, I had no follow through. Like I would just have random whims and then I would like not care about it the next day. So I kind of thought to myself, there's probably a super small chance I actually commit to this and actually make it happen because I just don't know what the hell I'm doing. And so I signed up for the LSAT, studied for the LSAT, took the LSAT. I actually took it 3 times. I got like really into it. I took it 3 times. I ended up getting like a pretty decent score. Nothing good enough to get me into like Harvard, but
how much do you pay?
I think maybe like $800.
No, dude, it's cheaper than that. That's like the bar.
Oh yeah,
I think
right.
That's like
I'm
lying. $500.
Okay. Yeah, it's a few hundred
bucks. And mind you, when I took it, at least it was like you. I went to like Ohio State and like took it with a freaking pencil and paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, you know,
no, you take it.
The MCAT at that point, you know, to go to med school, they've been on the computers, you know, with like noise canceling headphones. I was out there in the streets.
No, we're out there in the
test.
Sticks.
They give you like on a scratch paper. They give you
on a shitty little
desk that's like
yeah.
Wobbling around,
like the desk in elementary school.
Literally, you're packed in like rats. It's horrible test taking environment. Mm-hmm. LSAT. And now since COVID, they've computerized it, and scores have gone up so much. The LSAT, like getting a perfect score, is not even a big deal anymore.
Wow,
like,
I didn't know that.
They made it easier, I think. I don't know if the actual content, but just like the environment of the conditions of the testing, mm-hmm. It's just like 10 times better.
Wow. I did not know that.
I didn't think about it. They didn't use scratch paper. I was like scribbling in the margins trying to do like the logic games and stuff.
Yeah.
Horrible.
It's not so fun, but I think I just got really kind of lost in the sauce. I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like I haven't taken a test in a long
time.
You
would get addicted to the LSAT.
Yeah, I
you
did.
You would get really into it. That's just so huge.
And then I realized, oh, okay, well, if I like this, maybe I'll... And it's nothing... It's not testing you on anything legal related, so it's, like, not a representation of what law school will be like. But I kind of was thinking, okay, well, I can take a test. I can study. Because at this point, I'm like, my brain is basically fried from all the partying I'm doing. I don't have, like... I don't even know what's left after these years of partying.
So taking the LSAT kind of gave you the confidence to say, like,
yes.
Okay, like, I can maybe
exactly.
do this. Yeah.
So then I started applying to law schools. And basically, I don't want to sit here all day telling this is a long-ass story. So in summation, the LSAT worked out. I went to law school. Amy, to you.
Well, my story is quite different, only because... I mean, I was one of those kids that was, like, super feisty and cheeky. And so everybody was like, you should be a lawyer, you know, just because I, like, could talk, you know. And so after college, I started applying to law school, like, right out of college. And I took the LSAT. I didn't do as well as I wanted to. I think I took it 3 times, too.
Out of college?
No. So I took it once, and then I applied right out of college. Like, I fully did an application cycle right out of college.
Mm.
Got, like, not kind of the results that I wanted. I got into Loyola. I got into, like, UCI. Like, but I didn't get into, like, UCLA and USC and, like, kind of the school that I wanted to go to. And so then I decided I'd been entering in politics all through college. And so my political friends were like, you know, it's an election year. Like, come back to Ohio, run a race. Like, it'll be so fun. And I was like, all right. I really didn't get into the law schools that I wanted to get into. So why don't I, like, stay in Ohio and, like, run the state house race? And maybe it'll, like, make my resume better if I have some work experience and I can, like, get into the law school I want to get into. Mm-hmm. And so then I worked in politics in Ohio. I ended up, like, running that race. And then I joined, like, a more, like, I kept doing political work. Really, really liked it. And then, yeah, I didn't go to law school for, like, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then after one election year, the reality of, like, how fickle politics was kind of set in the sense that, like, I don't feel secure in any job. Like, campaign life is just not great. And then the only road to money is, like, consulting, which I just really didn't have much interest in. And so then I was, like, after a few years in politics, I was like, okay, like, let's reapply to law school. Took the LSAT again. I got the same score on the LSAT twice. Can you imagine, like, taking it twice?
I took it 3 times, and the second time I did worse than I did the first time.
Okay, that's actually worse than
I did. And it was after I studied... So
that's terrible.
Dude, I'm definitely a masochist because I got super into studying for the LSAT. Like, it was crazy. On how crazy I got into the LSAT, you'd think I would have done better.
Not to be dramatic, I'd rather take the bar again than the LSAT.
Oh, absolutely.
Not to be
not.
Dramatic. Okay, the thing about the LSAT is the skills-based test, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no content that you have to bring in with you to the
It's
test.
Not memorization.
It's not memorization at all. So you could just sit down and take the LSAT. It's just a reasoning
test.
Like,
logic?
Correct.
It's,
yeah. So there's not but the bar is like full memory time.
Yeah.
You know? So it just kind of depends on which you prefer. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I would prefer. I guess that's dramatic of me. I guess I would rather take the LSAT.
I was not good at LSAT. Like, I literally took, it's not like I was naturally good at it. I literally took multiple $1,000 class. Like, I think this is the reason that I ended up fully committing to the bit. Because I put an entire, like, several month class, in-person class, on my credit card when I was completely broke. And I was like, okay, well, we're invested.
Yeah, once you put down that kind of money.
Yeah,
like, you're
when I had nothing.
And even applying to law school is very expensive.
Yeah.
Like, each application fee is, like, $75, you know? So, I mean, it's not. Even just from the beginning, the legal career is going to be making you pay up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so then I got into more schools than I did the first time, but I kind of made a decision, like, I didn't go to the best school I got into, but I did go to the school that gave me the best money, like, scholarship, and then, like, the ranking. So I think I'm very happy about the decision I made about where I went to law school because, you know, I had a scholarship and I still was able to get the job I wanted, but I had to leave LA to do it. So, but yeah, I think, like, overall, it's nice to have gone to a school that didn't bankrupt me completely and, you know, have a good job out of it. So.
Yeah, I would say, like, with the school thing, this was...
Yeah, how did you pick Loyola? I can't remember. You got into...
Because I didn't get into...
Chapman.
No, that's in OC.
Oh, yeah.
Loyola was the best school I got into, and it meant I didn't have to. I was waitlisted at UCI, which I would have gone to, but I don't think I would have. I don't know if I would have gotten in, and they do it on, you know, if you want to be on their waitlist, you can't apply or you can't accept admission to anywhere else.
Oh yeah.
So it was too risky for me because being on the waitlist, I was on the cusp of getting in or not. And if I put all my eggs in that basket and didn't work out, like, I would have been screwed. And also, I don't think I would have really fit in at UCI.
I was just going to say, I cannot imagine.
Although I didn't fit in where we went either. I don't think I would have fit in at any law school, but.
Cassie came into law school and basically said, like, I think she told me when we first met.
I'm not here to make friends.
And I was like, okay. Well, nice
I'm
to
not
you.
Here to make friends.
Literally, she was like, I have enough friends. I was like,
oh,
and I was
that's
new to
cool.
LA.
That sounds
so
bitchy.
I was in a totally different headspace.
Shut
I was like,
bitch.
No, I mean, I didn't even take it in a mean way. You were just real cool.
No, because
there was context.
We became
sure.
friends the first day.
We sat next to each other at orientation, and we're like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Medium.
No, I think I was, yeah, I mean, I do kind of remember saying that. I didn't come here to make friends, but hey, let's be friends.
No, literally.
When I like someone, I'm just like, hey, when are we friends?
It was honestly the first semester of law school, I had so much fun.
It was fun. Until I got
so
my grades,
fun.
It was really fun.
And then COVID hit like 2 months later.
Yeah.
I often say to people, like, 2019, that last bit is like one of the happiest.
It was a highlight.
Like, we were just very hopeful. We had just started law school. Like,
it was exciting.
So many
the world was our oyster.
Yeah, it's so exciting for someone like me, especially who hasn't been in college for 3 years, to go back to an environment.
Yeah, I hadn't been in college
so
for like 6 years.
It, you know, to be back in an academic setting. I love school. I wish I could. I'd be in school forever.
I don't know why I just said I hadn't been in college in 6 years. That is such a lie.
Wait,
you're 2 years younger than me, right?
Yes.
So
and then I took three.
It had been five.
Five,
years?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's still
oh, I guess,
a pretty
okay.
long time.
Yeah, it was weird because it was weird for me because I had done multiple years of working and I'm going back to school with all these like 22-year-olds. So that was weird.
Yeah, I feel like that's fair. Like,
and they're very, very in a different place. And a lot of them also were, you like, it going to law school in LA, it's a lot of rich people.
I was
going to
say, I think it was a little triggering for Kelsey because a lot of people are very.
I don't even know if I'd say triggering. It was just like, I was very out of my, I've never been in an environment like that. So I was just like, whoa.
Out of your element.
Yeah. Because like I went to UCSB and you don't really see income there because everyone just lives in the college town. And yeah, like some kids might have nice BMWs, but like you don't see that much disparity in lifestyle because everyone's just living by the beach and like living in the same shitty apartments.
Right.
Like going to Loyola, it's, there's a like,
where people live, like, there wasn't, like, no one lived on campus, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody,
yeah.
Some people were going back to their parents' mansions in Beverly Hills. Some people were
yeah.
not. You know?
I feel like the age gap and just.
Because some of these girls are, like, 23, you know, like.
Decked out in Cartier,
yeah.
driving G-Wagons. Yeah. And I'm like, why are you even in law school? Why would you? Because, frankly, and, like, this all exposed myself right now, I went because I thought I'd be making a shit ton of money right out of law school. That is 100% the reason I went. I'm not even going
to
lie.
I hate to admit it. That's why I went, too.
I'm sure
I
that's
say,
why most people go.
If anyone's telling you they didn't
they're
go to
lying.
Law school to make money,
eventually. Does anybody have passion for law?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they probably become public defenders.
Exactly.
And good that's for them.
Yeah.
But that's not why, I mean, I wanted to support myself. And there was no way I was going to do that. And at least at the time, I thought there is no way I'll be able to support myself and live the lifestyle that I want to live if I don't get a credential of some
mm-hmm.
kind. And at that time, I was like, the only credential I could possibly get is a law degree.
I think that's awesome.
Is there any other option?
I mean, I don't, if there is, I'm not aware of it. In hindsight, I think I would say, I mean, maybe this is a question for later down the line, but if I had invested the amount of effort and time and money into studying how to run a business and maybe learning some basic economics, I probably would be a lot farther now. But I also don't want to look at it with regrets because there's a lot of, I'm glad I did it ultimately, as much as I'll complain about it, I'm really glad I did it because A, I wouldn't have met either of you if I hadn't gone to law school.
What do you mean?
I only went back to working in the restaurant industry because I was studying for the LSAT.
Wow.
No,
yeah.
Are you sure? Because
yes.
I feel like this came up, like, I think a few months into you working in a restaurant? I feel like you came up with this idea, or you already went to work in a restaurant with this idea. I just haven't heard.
The only reason I went back to work in a restaurant was because I was studying for the LSAT and I couldn't work a full-time job with surgery. When I took the job at North and ROC simultaneously, it was while I was studying. But I don't know, your memory's better than mine. So
you can just check with me. Like, I will.
I actually trust
your hard drive.
Your memory better than mine. So maybe I did just.
So wait, how did you get? I want to ask a question.
Oh, how we met? Well, how we met?
Yeah.
So
I think I kind of know, but.
We applied at the same job, RC. It's a Republic.
The Dumpling Place?
Dumpling Place. That's where Republic of China is a Taiwanese restaurant. Now it's called Dumpling and Noodle.
Yeah, you said it was good. Like,
really
it was good.
It's really good. So
it's
kind of
like Din Tai Fung, but low key better. And not as expensive.
we shout out the same places, the same friends every other time. I remember every of the first times that I met every one of my homies. So,
so cute.
Yeah, and we just like came for interviews. I think maybe you interviewed separately. So they did like a spread of all the most popular dishes at.
They let us feast.
That's so
cool. Yeah,
they
let us feast. I would say it's a little. I think it's unusual. Like everybody has Chinese food, but not a lot of people had Taiwanese food. Like 3-cup chicken, you know?
Yeah.
Or like popcorn chicken. I feel like it's like.
It's different than like
a certain way.
Like what you see on a usual like Chinese food.
Yeah.
So yeah, Greg, the manager or owner back then, I think he still owns the place. He did like a spread: string beans, popcorn chicken, 3-cup chicken, like dishes I've never heard of. And I remember she said she's pescatarian already then.
Damn,
you have such a good memory.
Yeah, I remember it really well. I think there was maybe a couple more people, and I think we on the very first time we met, I remember you were going to Coachella weekend 2. I was going to Coachella weekend 1.
Always
weekend 2, girl. So yeah, that's how we met.
You have such a good memory. I'm blown away.
I literally have a very bad memory, like you. Like long term memory, I'm not very good.
My short term memory is not good either. So there's that.
So you guys remember why we're here?
To talk about the love.
Okay, so thank you for this quick intro, ladies. And what area of law do you practice, Amy?
I am in corporate law. So I had the very wise idea that I didn't want to do research, which is pretty much like what most first and second. Is that mostly what you do? You do a lot of research?
Not a lot, but
well,
I have to. I do a lot of motion writing, which involves research.
I did enough like writing in law school and research that I just was like, I don't know if I can do this for the foreseeable future. It didn't appeal to me. So anybody who doesn't want to do research, the answer is to try to get into corporate transactional law. So yeah, I do like finance work. I do mostly, I do half energy finance work. So like financings to build like windmills and solar farms and battery energy storage projects, which I actually like.
That's cool.
Yeah, at least it's like financing something that's like
helping
for
the world.
Yeah. It's also like a cutting edge, you know, area. Like renewable energy is obviously like growing, you know, so it's a good like space to be in. I also work for a female partner in that group, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Not many female partners in corporate, which I'm sure I will get into later. It's just like corporate law, especially I practice in Chicago. It's just like very much male dominated. It's and I really try not to be one of those people who constantly sees that. But I mean, oftentimes I'm consistently the only woman in the room. Like,
And you feel that.
Oh,
I mean,
you feel
no matter, even if you're around men that are, you know, inclusive and treat you, you're never an equal with men.
And I'm not
really
going with men that are inclusive.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm saying even when you are,
exactly.
You still feel I'm the only woman here. So I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Could be problematic.
Yeah. So I think for me, you know, big law, being in big law, the thing that I've learned over the past, I guess it's been almost 2 years, which is crazy. It really does. The work all kind of sucks. It's finance. Like, who's going to be passionate about, like, you know, credit agreements?
I mean, check. You're passionate about the check.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Because, you know, Aritzia is not going to buy itself.
Aritzia is not going to listen. So the package guy I'm building now, the package guy I'm building now, when he drops off the packages, he sends us an email. And he'll say, one package and one Aritzia at the door. Because, like, no, he knows.
He's used to it.
Yeah, he's used to it.
That's cute.
Yeah, so I'm in corporate law. I think the biggest lesson I've learned so far is that the work all kind of sucks, and it really, if you want to survive in big law, you have to find a champion. Somebody who's like, you know, a partner who's like looking out for you, got your back. Like, you have to find your people in big law or you're not going to last. So my journey to finding my people has been very tumultuous, to say.
But you've been with the same company,
I've been with the same firm, yeah. But so big law firms have, you know, 1,000+ attorneys. And so basically the structure of a big law firm is each partner, it's like their own business, right? Because they all practice different things. And sometimes the benefit of using a big law firm is that, you know, you have your lawyer, and then if you have an issue that they don't necessarily practice in, they can just call someone in another office or whatever. You know, it's full service, right? But basically at my firm, the junior associates, the first years, are in the free market system. So they basically hand you a laptop and say, good luck. You don't have a boss. You don't have anyone to like that gives you work. You have to like basically go out and sell yourself and knock on people's doors and like ask for work. They have like an assignment committee and people like that will maybe give you an assignment here and there. But it is really on you to go out, build connections, and get work. Mm-hmm. So like I don't get my work just handed to me.
That's not the same in litigation there, right? Or
I
is
mean,
it?
It's less. I think it's a little less of a free market system in litigation.
I don't see how it could be in litigation.
But litigation is so much easier. You get on a case, you can be on a case for years. Corporate deals are like anywhere from one, like less than a week to maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like they're really, really short transactions. So my constant struggle is like finding enough work, but not too much. I never work a 40-hour week. It's either like 20 or it's like 65+.
So yeah.
There's no, that's the toughest part. And like not knowing, when, you know, when should I ask for more work? My biggest thing with work is always knowing when to ask for more, you know, and it's so political. Because think about it. You're selling yourself. It's a big firm, but everyone's doing their own thing. It's a bunch of like little businesses under the umbrella of like this law firm that will remain nameless. So corporate law, big firm.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm on the other. So basically there's two
sides of the house.
Amy is on the transactional corporate side, and I'm on the litigation side. And there's probably almost zero similarities between the two.
We can't talk about work. Like,
I
don't know. I
have no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Kelsey deals with
the
court.
She goes, I have to go flip comments. I'm like, what? Or something.
Yeah, but you guys have all your acronyms, like MSJ.
I know. I hopefully don't use my acronyms with you.
No, you don't. My other friends aren't as good as
I know you don't.
So basically, Kelsey goes to like deals with the court. I don't deal with the court at all. So basically, I'm doing deals, and then if something's gone wrong with my transaction,
then you go to the court.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't want to do litigation. I wanted to do what Amy does, but your girl didn't have good enough grades, and those jobs are a lot harder to come by.
I had to move to Chicago to get this job. In context, because COVID, you know, I definitely like took out a lot of jobs and like a lot of summer stuff. Like I had a choice between litigating in LA or like applying.
Yeah.
I literally moved to Chicago just for this job. So
yeah.
All that to say, it's not like it's easy to get these jobs.
Yeah, it's just litigation is very, I mean, obviously it's very adversarial, and that can be fun and spicy, or it can be super annoying. It depends on who you're up against, but basically litigation involves someone files a lawsuit. There's two sides. There's the party who's sued and the party who's being sued. And I mostly defend the party who is being sued, which typically is companies. And yeah, you just write a bunch of motions. You work on discovery. It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of arguing with opposing counsel. It's a lot of going to court, speaking to a judge, telling the judge why your case isn't as far along as it should be. Getting potentially yelled at by a judge. I haven't really gotten yelled at by a judge yet. I've kind of gotten to go up against opposing counsel in court, and that's fun because I kind of got a result that I wanted against my arch nemesis, opposing counsel.
This is the coolest thing about like what Kelsey does, right? Like someone in my position on the litigation side, they're not going to go to court maybe ever, like because like the junior associates at big firms, they don't get the kind of like experience.
Yeah, we get
like, she's going to court already as like a second year.
I was going to court the week I was sworn in.
Yeah.
So it's very stressful, but it's also a good experience. But I'm pretty much in perpetual constant fear because I'm still a second year and I don't really know what I'm doing. So I have a lot of trust placed on me by those who supervise me, and half the time I'm just going in their off vibes. Like, truly.
I've never been in an environment where I've been so unsure about myself than corporate law, especially for me being in corporate law. They don't teach you any of that in law school.
It does a number on you. It does a number on you.
Well, my confidence has definitely taken a hit as a result of being at a job where I feel so, like, there's such a large learning curve. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but I mean, I guess it's good, right? That we're like being challenged.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I'd rather have this than just do the same thing every day and never learn. But it's, I mean, I'm in a constant state of fear and I don't really love that. And I mean, my self-confidence went to shit in law school because I wasn't really as successful as a student as I anticipated
to be.
Yeah. And so I just felt like a total idiot. And then I was like, I'm never going to get a good job. This is terrible. Why did I do this? Now I'm out. Now I'm
Kelsey has climbed.
I'm climbing the ladder.
She is a hustler. She will get it done.
I'm climbing the ladder, but I don't know. I look forward to the day where I just feel a baseline level of confidence.
Security, exactly.
And I know I'll never know how to do everything because this is something where even partners who've been doing this for 30 years, a motion could come up or you can literally make motions up. Like, you can get super creative, and that's what's fun about litigation. There's an infinite number of problems that need to be solved, and you can just tailor a motion to your, or discovery or whatever, to your specific situation. There's loopholes for everything. Like, there's, you can work the system, not in like an illegal way, but you can just be so creative to get certain tasks accomplished. Yeah. And that's really cool. But you'll just always be learning. And I think something important to keep in mind is you have to kind of give up the idea, I should know everything, because you just will not ever know everything. And especially now, no one expects us to. I'm at a point where I'm comfortable enough to tell my bosses, I don't know how to do this. I've never done it before. I'm going to try my best, but I just want to let you know I've never done it before.
That's the worst part about being a young lawyer, is to just I get an assignment a week where I have no idea what I'm doing.
But you figure it out, right?
You do.
Do you use, you know,
like AI? Everyone keeps asking me. I've never.
You can't ask it legal questions, but you can kind of get.
Do you use it?
I started to very recently, but it will not give you. I mean, this one, I don't know how you would use it.
Okay, the way I would use it,
I can't ask it like specific legal questions.
The way I would use it is to write emails for me, because I have to send like sometimes
it would be good for that.
Yeah, to like a large group of people. I would definitely use it to write an email. I don't know. I don't really like. I'm not researching the law, right? So I don't.
Yeah.
Really, like, deal work is very like. Lots of emails, fast paced, like documents flying around, but it's not like, you know, we're not necessarily researching legal issues.
I did admittedly ask it a question about legal research because I was desperate, and it told me, find a lawyer. I was like, but that's me.
I've written an email on my request to ChatGPT. It's like, rewrite this email for the person to make you important.
Or like, wow. No, it's very impressive
for the reader to feel important, or make it more formal, and then it would make it like really formal. To who would my concern?
Yeah,
I would be like, on a scale of
less
1
formal.
To 10, take it to 8, or and then it will, and then take it down a notch, not as formal, and then finally we come to a common ground, me and Chat.
So can you get ChatGPT?
I was
like
scared of it. It's on. I mean, probably. But I was really scared of it. It freaked me out. And then I was desperate at one point, and I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to try it. Luke uses it a lot to create menus, like recipes.
Oh.
It's really good for that.
Like, in what way?
He'll say, give me a side dish incorporating vegetables for my girlfriend who's dairy and gluten-free, aka the diet that I choose to comply with maybe 40% of the time. But yeah, it's nice. It gives really good recipes.
You eat dairy more or you eat gluten more?
Dairy.
Okay.
I've been bad with the gluten thing recently because Luke's been cooking breads, and his breads don't really bother me because I think
baker era.
I think it's because they're like fresh and homemade. They don't really bother me.
Yeah,
but if I go eat like a bread from a store, I'm gonna not feel well.
Cheesecake factory bread.
Yeah.
Brownless.
So good. I don't know. If I eat a little bit, I'm not in pain. It's weird. It's kind of unpredictable. But with dairy, it's so hard for me not to eat dairy because it's on so many good dishes.
Yeah.
But I don't like typically
good
buy
dish,
cheese.
Ice cream. It's weird. I used to be an ice cream person, and then last year I went on a meal plan that before Coachella, I like I lost some weight. But because you eat kind of the same thing every day, when you get off the meal plan, it's like, let's say your taste buds are at zero, and then whatever you eat after that meal plan, it's kind of like you're resetting your preferences. Mm-hmm. So I think I ate Oreo something when I was still very much
right off the plan,
and then now I like Oreos.
You're like, Oreos are the best.
Yeah, I don't really care about ice cream that much. I don't really care about, you know, frozen yogurt, but Oreos and just chocolate stuff. But it's
no, not
jealous
of you're
not
a big chocolate. I mean, but I love burgers.
When I'm stoned,
like,
I get a really bad sweet tooth. Otherwise, I'm more like salty and crunchy, like potato chips.
I like chips. I love chips and salsa is like the food that I would
yeah, that's your
tea.
That's your jam. I like mine is rice and beans.
Yeah, I knew that about you.
I haven't found my arch nemesis opposing counsel in this job yet.
Well, it's only been what?
No, but I had them within a week because they're psychotic. Yeah. They just come at you for no reason. They come. One called me brazen in an email.
What does brazen mean?
Like overly
harsh,
bold.
Yeah. Or yeah, bold.
Basically, like wily.
Yeah. Yeah, like bold.
Because
like
I filed a motion against him. I'm like, I'm just doing my job. You don't need to call me brazen.
Damn.
There's a lot more, also, like, just as a general matter, there's a lot more women in litigation.
Totally.
So I feel like that's one thing that's also nice about it.
Yeah.
There's a lot more women on that side.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's a lot of drama with the cases, so that is kind of what keeps me going, because a lot of the day-to-day is so miserable of it. It's a lot of little side quests that you have to go on. Like, you can be... Like, I'll go in, you never know where your day is going to go. I'll go in one day and say, okay, these are my tasks for the day. This is what I need to do. I'm devoting my whole day to this. And then you can just get a message from someone saying, hey, I need this today. And then your day just goes derailed, and then everything just gets discombobulated. So I think not having, and I'm sure that happens to you constantly as well, I think not having any control over your day is very... very exhausting.
Our jobs are definitely more similar now than I'm realizing, because I have the same feel. Like, our jobs are different in the day to day, but they like
the tasks
the same
that we're doing
of,
are
like,
different, but
yeah, but,
yeah.
The, but the nature of the constant fire drills and like
constant,
you know, I will say, like, okay, so I work for two partners primarily, one in New York and one in LA, and I love them both, but they're very different. And I will say, working for a female partner and then working for a male partner, there are a lot less fire drills. Parker's group, and so it's
interesting
to see, like,
now
yeah.
That you say that, wait,
do you find the same thing?
I've never thought about it, but now that I'm thinking about it, yes. The female partner I worked with was very on top of it and would be asking me status of things well in advance, and now male partners, it's a little more chaotic. I don't want to make sweeping generalizations,
I also do a lot of things for male partners a lot of times that they tell me is a huge rush, like, so hey, like, you need to drop everything and get this done, and I'll send it to them, and then it'll sit in their inbox for a really long time, and there's
yeah.
No like worse feeling than that, you know,
because
you
just
killed
yourself,
like, killed
to
yourself
get something
and also
done.
Even more than that, it's like, if you had given me 2 or 3 days, I could have done such a better job, and I could have actually learned while I did it. So
yeah.
By you giving me this very false compressed deadline, you're not only stressing me out, but you're robbing me of the opportunity to, like, actually
create something good.
Yes, make a good work product that
yeah.
I feel proud of, and then I feel bad about myself when the review eventually does come back, and it's a crazy red line of, like, all these things that I did wrong. So if I had a little more time, yes, so that part is frustrating.
I think there is a general lack of thought put into delegation.
Yep.
And
in a legal environment, lawyers are terrible managers by nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard because you don't, it's a constant battle between getting it done as fast as you can
and
compliance with the arbitrary deadline. In a lot of cases, there are some hard deadlines where you just, there's a court filing due, you got to get it done by X time. There's no room for wiggle room, but other times, if it's an arbitrary deadline, it's like, well, I have a million other things to do. I need to get this done. I need to drop everything else. And now what I created is garbage.
Hot garbage, exactly.
And now I feel, like you said, I feel bad because I don't want to create something terrible when, like, I care about my work product.
That's the thing about both of us. Like, we don't...
We're perfectionists.
We do... I care a lot about what
me
I
too.
Send. So when I send something that I know is not my best work, it's the worst feeling.
It makes me feel like I let myself and everyone else around me down.
Do you guys think those insecurities are visible to your colleagues?
Yes.
In my annual review, the biggest, or my, I've only had one review so far, and the biggest thing they said was, you need to work on your confidence. And I was so crushed. I mean, that was like a huge theme of my review.
I've never even had a review.
Okay, well, that just highlights the difference between Big Law and like mid-sized.
I asked for a review multiple times.
Yeah.
Not at my current job,
because,
not my last job.
Because
never got one.
Reviews are actually a lot of work for the organization. But you, you know, as an employee, I believe you are entitled to a
I
review.
Agree.
Yeah. So
I'll get a review at my current job.
Doesn't it come when there's an annual really,
bonus?
Not a bonus, but a raise.
Well, if you're at a certain places that won't be named, there's no raise, no bonus,
hey,
and
no review.
And no review.
Yeah. I mean, in Big Law, it's very, so every, like, Big Law.
It's uniform.
It's uniform. Everybody gets the same raise every year. Everybody gets the same bonus every year. It's like
okay.
Unionized.
But if you hit your hours.
If you hit your hours,
yeah.
You get a bonus. But the thing that's nice about Big Law jobs versus, like, finance jobs is our base is so high and our bonuses are low. So we're very base heavy.
Well, they're not low, but compared to your base, they're low. Oh, compared
to
banking. Yeah. Yeah.
Banking,
like,
you have a lower
in
base.
Finance, you
it can be doubled sometimes if you're salary,
yeah.
But like Big Law salaries are very high and relative.
Yeah, relative.
Salary.
Yeah. It's
like
a 10% or
I don't know.
15%.
I mean, I can just say, like, a Big Law, I think out of law school, it's public. It's like I started at 215. I think they're starting
yeah.
at 225.
And if you hit a bonus, it's probably
20K.
20K.
So, I mean,
yeah.
After taxes, you know, honestly, what I say for Big Law, not that I don't want to hit my hours, I do want to hit my hours, but.
I think you will this year.
No, I'm definitely going to hit my hours. I mean, now it's a point of pride, okay? Because
yeah.
I didn't hit them last year. Corporates have been very slow because of high interest rates, but. And also, as I said, it took me kind of time to find my group. But yeah, I think your first year especially, it's kind of nice to coast a little bit. Not that I did this, but that because, you know, you're already making so much money.
Yeah.
Like a 25-year-old.
Totally.
That, like, what's another, like, okay, $10,000 after
yeah,
taxes?
It's,
you might as well
to work, like,
to
100
work
more
so
hours.
Many more
yeah,
hours.
It's insane.
So, like, it's not.
Even with me, like, I don't make as much money as someone in Big Law, but I even see, oh, my God, is this bonus even worth it?
Yeah.
It's, because it's literally the difference between me working every weekend or not.
Yeah. So
and a few thousand dollars is like, what's that really going to do? I could literally spend that in 2 seconds. You know
but
what
that's
I'm saying?
That's the thing with Big Law. It's like people think it's great, you know, because of the money. But at a certain point, you don't have time to enjoy your money. Like going on vacation is just not a thing. Like you have to be plugged in all the time. They pay you that much.
Yeah.
To
buy all of your time.
If you're on call 24/7. Like that's so. Yeah. So I would say the bonus thing, like. It does get higher as you're going up to the point where that's what they do, though. They kind of trap you in the golden handcuffs because there's no job that's going to pay you
no.
as much.
You go anywhere else, you take like a
50%
pay cut. And you're still going to be working a lot.
Exactly. So people keep saying, you know, because I've struggled with Big Law, like, why don't you just get out of Big Law? Why would I do that? My friends are working not that much less than me for half the pay. So if I'm going to be in law,
and I think
you know?
I think the only difference, I mean, this might be very conclusory, but I think like, the only difference between the demand on your time and the demand on my time is it's audacious for someone to hit me up on the weekend to do something. Unless it's planned in advance, that is not chill.
Yeah. Whereas for me, it's totally
for you, we're on vacation. If any, like in my current job, there's a little more respect. It's not fully respected, but there's a little more. No one's going to say drop, I mean, knock on wood. I don't think it's acceptable anywhere but Big Law for someone to be like, drop everything you're doing on your vacation and hop on a
cake. I have friends, like, when I went to Tulum, I worked 4 hours a day, and it was like a scheduled vacation. There's just and that's just the culture. And the problem with Big Law, too, is like, what eventually happens is the people who last just give up their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm like kicking and screaming and clawing to still have a life because I just don't, it's not worth it, you know?
Yeah.
So I still make plans, even if I have to cancel my plans with work. I'm still going to try to make plans.
Yeah.
And
I think you're getting it. I think you're getting like a pretty good grasp on it. And I think I appreciate this about post-pandemic life. Previously, litigators would have to be in court for every hearing.
now
in an office every single day, eight to six, eight to seven, whatever, eight till you're done. It's crazy. Now everything is on Zoom except for trials. Hours are flexible. Luckily I'm fortunate to be at a firm where they don't demand that we go in, and I really appreciate that. I can kind of start working when I want, and unless things really pop off and I'm glued to my desk till midnight, I have days where I'll start working at 7 a.m. and bill my 8 hours, and yeah, I mean, it's so unpredictable because I never know what's going to happen, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think I really like having a good friend who's in big law because I can see and compare and like gather data.
Yeah.
And I mean, and
but
you can see.
It's nice for me to have a friend not in big law because honestly.
You can look at me and be like, okay, her life isn't
well,
that much.
That's kind of where I was going with that. I do bring up you a lot because I mean, I complain about my job a lot. So naturally the thing people say is quit. That's not. Things can always be worse, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so I look at most of my friends that I graduated with aren't in big law, and they are working. Again, they definitely.
I think I probably work the most.
Definitely. You work
because
you care.
But I'm training to be in big law because I'm torturing myself so much, and I like am so devoted, and like I think at some point I could be like capable of getting big law job.
I would say
because
once you're a mid-level in big law, like you're in a really good position. Like, mm-hmm. You can make it those first like few years, so and it's kind of nice for you. You're not even like in the race.
I just hope
I can
lateral in.
Yep, get right in there.
We'll see. Yeah, I feel like I'm already living that. I've gotten a taste of that lifestyle a little bit, working that much, and I'm like, okay, if I was making way more money, I probably wouldn't care.
I will say too, like the biggest problem for me with big law is not the work itself, but it's just as I said, it's the constant worrying about finding enough work and like just the politics of it. It's so
crazy. Which I think that's unique to corporate because litigation like that would not happen.
No, it's much more like streamlined.
It's linear.
I'm telling you, corporate is like the craziest thing is like we had some first years. Like I had a first year associate tell me last year I billed 5 hours this week.
The whole week.
I had hours where I billed 5 hours.
I want to murder all of you.
I know. Okay, but then this is my point about how bad the big law system is about allocating tasks in a free market system. I also have a friend who's tracking for $2,700 this year, which is $700 above the. I mean,
and
so
that's what
it's just. There's no because partners basically just they give the work to the people who they like arbitrarily decide they like based
pick,
on
yeah.
the law school that they went to. Oh, you went to Notre Dame, so did I. Like that's literally
yeah.
how this stuff happens. Like,
they're just chumming it up.
It's, exactly, it's a total popularity contest. And for me, I moved to Chicago from LA. I'm a brown woman, first generation.
Are there like a lot of brown people?
Oh my
in
god,
Chicago?
No.
No, it's all white people.
No, it is all WASPy white people in Chicago. So I didn't summer at the firm. I didn't go to like a traditional theater law school.
You're like a transfer.
I'm
basically.
Like, I don't know what. I'm a total fish out of water there, like complete.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, worked in politics before law school. So I have a very like different.
At least you're good at politicking around the firm.
Yeah.
You're way better about that than me. I'm like, just everyone leave me alone. Let me do my work.
I'm visible.
Amy will. Amy's like a total social butterfly.
Yeah.
Let me ask. So as far as I understand, a lot of people who go to law school, their first education, you know, their bachelor's is like a lot of them are English major, which you are, Kelsey, and you are yours is a political science.
Yeah, I think that's probably
is it political silence.
Political silence.
Well,
you are from Russia.
I was kidding.
I said you are from Russia.
Political silence is my middle name. So
Freudian slip.
Yeah.
What's like a good background for law school?
Probably
English, like because
no.
you have to write a lot of stuff.
Honestly, well,
Polly says probably better. English, I mean, I just bullshitted my whole way through college. I didn't really learn any, I didn't learn any like practical skills. All I did was read. And honestly, like law school is the biggest racket. Let me just get, I don't even want to go into the whole law school thing into too much depth because that would literally take me 15 hours or longer. But the real kind of glaring flaw with law school is the fact that it takes 3 years. And then the biggest, most definitive moment of you becoming a lawyer is passing the bar. And you learn almost nothing in law school that will be tested on the bar. And then you have to pay like $5,000 for a bar course to learn everything.
It does sound really whack when you're saying it all.
And then, no joke, you cram in 2 months everything that you, quote unquote, should have learned in law school over 3 years. You cram it all in 2 months, regurgitate on a test, and never think about it again.
That's a very accurate description. Mm-hmm. So, like, you do technically take...
Law school should be 1 year.
Yeah, honestly. Listen, if they were preparing us just to take it past the bar, it should be 1 year. You know?
And, okay, let me be real with myself here.
To be honest with you guys, so I'm English major, like, English linguistics. Mm-hmm. You know, I was studying to be a teacher of English and German. In Russia. But I would say that the most English I got, so in the 10th and 11th grade of school, like they have it a little different. I know you guys have 12 grades, and back home it was 11. So in the 10th and 11th grade, I went to a tutor who is a professor at the university that I went to, and she like prepped me for the entrance exams to this university. I gotta say, I got like the biggest chunk of my English knowledge from her in the 10th and 11th grade of my high school. And then the first 2 years of my university, it was more about English grammar and like speaking and translation, like interpreting English. While in the third and fourth year, it was more of like English literature, American literature, like history. I used to know like your guys' history really well. English is really
probably
well.
Probably knew it better than me.
At some point in my life, yeah, probably then. And also a little bit when I was studying for my citizenship test. Never remember anything anymore. Yeah, I want to say, like, the biggest chunk was in the 10th, 11th grade of my high school, and then the first 2 years of the university. Mm-hmm. And, like, basically you're saying I mean, without any legal education, I could just study for the bar.
Oh, you should go to law school.
No.
She said it earlier.
I'm just curious. I'm just seeing this parallel.
Yeah.
You're saying most... chunk, like the biggest chunk of information to pass the bar is in the bar prep course.
Oh, 100%. You could just take the bar.
Yeah.
Study for the bar and just take it.
No, guys, I consider myself a creative lately. Like, you know, I think
you
this
are
is, I think this is a,
this is more your
this is more speed.
Yes.
So you brought up the citizenship test.
Yeah.
The one cool thing that I get to do in my job is like some pro bono work. So like, you know, free legal work. And so one of my favorite things to do for pro bono is to get people their citizenships.
Aww,
so, yeah.
That's cool.
But what I was going to say is I prepared, so I just had a young lady get her citizenship like last week, and I prepared her for the citizenship test. These questions are really hard. Like, I don't know. I definitely did not know.
You just read like the week before.
First of all, look at the sheer number of questions. Like, this is how many questions.
Crazy.
That's a lot of questions. Why does the flag have 13 stripes? Like, okay,
wait, 13 original colonies.
Yes, but like, come on. Why should someone, I don't know. That's just such a random.
Yeah, like why does anyone need to know that?
What is the economic system in the United States? Capitalist economy.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's just, I don't know. I think it was tougher than I expected.
I tried to study in advance, but I was like, what for? I already forgot everything. And then I just did
like
the week before.
Yeah.
That's like
pretty much how I did
that.
Sorry,
I studied for
that was horrible.
That was so bad that day.
That was rough.
We had some
very stressful time. There's just so many tests. So many tests.
That's the thing about becoming a lawyer, there's a lot.
And then your
entire
kind of value gets wrapped up in how you do on tests. And I mean, I should have seen that coming, but I just never had that experience before. And with the LSAT, I guess I kind of put value, like linked my value to the test, but not in a way, like not anywhere close to the way that I did once I was in law school.
Law school is unique because a lot of graduate programs, once you get in, your grades don't really matter that much. But like, you know, business programs and stuff, like you go to like business school, people that go to business school, like they're literally going to networking party for 2 years.
Yeah.
Sorry to people who went to B school.
Yeah.
But that's just not our experience. Like going to law school, like
you get put through the ringer.
Yeah,
getting into the easy part.
Getting into the easy part, exactly. But I think for a lot of graduate programs, once you're in, it's kind of like your grades don't matter. But with lawyers, it directly impacts what kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're at a school that's not a top 20, the curve is not nice to you.
Yeah, and I don't know why they do that, but they make our it makes it so much harder for us to get competitive on the job market because the way that they calculate our GPAs at lower ranked schools is so much
it's
less
brutal.
Forgiving. Like I think at UCLA the lowest grade you can get is a B minus.
Yeah.
And we were like, that's our curve. Like, we're curved out of B minus. Like,
horrible.
That's our average grade. So it just made, going to a not, like, top law school is a huge gamble. Because you just, like, the job prospects are not as great.
Yeah. Is UCLA one of the top law schools?
Yeah.
But not Loyola?
No. So we're like 50.
It's good. 60? Yeah. Maybe when I went, I think it was in the 60s. It might have gone up.
It's like, but here's the thing.
But in LA,
it
has
a
very
good
reputation.
Firm in LA. Like, there's lots of big law lawyers. And, I mean, you know the partner I work for at once went to Southwestern? Yeah.
Wow.
The female went to energy part.
I did not know
that. I love her even more for it. Like,
awesome. Yeah.
So
that gives me hope.
So, Harvard Law, number one.
I think so.
Not anymore. The rankings are all like random.
Yeah, what's
like
the top
five? They just
five
move around.
Not necessarily
Yale, Harvard, Stanford.
What about USC?
USC is not.
All right, I'm going to read off the top five. It's going to surprise you guys. Okay, guess which two schools are tied for number one.
It's not going to be the ones I mentioned.
No, it is.
Harvard
and Yale?
Columbia.
No, you got one of them. Yale is one of them.
Okay.
And the other is Stanford.
Oh.
Stanford's number one, Yale's tied for number one. And then number three is University of Chicago.
Wow.
And this is U.S. News and World Report.
Okay.
Four is Duke, tied with Harvard. And then Penn.
It moves around
UVA.
A lot.
It moves a lot. Yeah. Northwestern is good. UCLA is number 13, so like a very good school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And pretty much when you go to UCLA, then your grades just don't matter.
No.
I mean, if you're in like the top
50%,
Like, actually, I think that's like what it probably is.
Yeah. I mean, I at my last job 2 jobs ago, my first job.
Yeah. I didn't know your boss's name and I don't want to say
insurance defense.
It. Yeah.
Okay. I worked with a guy who went to UCLA.
Yeah, you told me that. You were like, why are you here?
I was like, dude, come work at my new
place.
That
type of person, like, they might actually just like the law, right? Because like, they're not doing it for the money. That's for sure.
Or the learning experience.
Again, law firms, like, one of the biggest problems from my perspective is that they don't hire people to, like, manage them. They're self-managed. Just because you're...
It's the Wild West.
It's the
Wild
West.
Style.
Like, if you have a really good lawyer who brings in a lot of business, that big law firm's going to make them, like, head of this or head of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're a good lawyer and you have a lot of clients,
you have
any business managing people or, like... You know, any business acumen. So I feel like big law firms would be behooved to hire some business people to run the
mine place. Actually has one.
Yeah, we have them too.
Yeah,
they don't
have
any real power.
But do they really
maker
get
and
involved?
Partners are the ones
yeah.
that make the decisions.
Yeah,
and that from my perspective, it's just total ego. Because if they had an ounce of humility, they'd say, "This is not where I shine."
Yeah,
I mean, but they don't. They're all egomaniacs.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's true.
Some of my colleagues are very, very.
We love you all, but you're crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, not a smooth transition, but what do you guys think are, I guess, two questions. Well, I'm going to go with the first one. What are some of the skills you should have when you go into this profession?
I think,
like,
resilience.
Skills and maybe what kind
character
of person
traits.
You should be. Character
yeah.
traits.
I think
skills.
You really need to have resilience, and I'm saying that to myself. Because I am very much I'm really hard on myself and I hold myself to a high standard when it comes to my work. And I want everything I do to be well received and to be, you know, appreciated, not appreciated like, oh my God, you did such a good job. But I don't want the person who receives my work to have to completely redo it and be like, this girl's a complete idiot. You know what I mean? So I want my first attempt at something to be well executed. With that being said, at a certain point, like Amy and I were saying earlier, there's so much uncharted territory where we don't know how to do everything that we're doing. So you have to accept at a certain point, this isn't going to be the best thing I've ever done. This is my first attempt or my second, for this is my either my first or my second rodeo. So it's not going to be the best thing this partner's ever seen. I have to do my best, but I also have to accept that if there's some criticism of this work, it doesn't mean I'm a bad person. It doesn't mean I'm a moron. It just means I'm new to this and I'm learning. And you have to just have some grace with yourself. And I think that's really hard for me because I'm like, this is, you know, I'll write something and I just feel like this is bad. I go, they're going to fire me when they see this. I literally think that all the time. They're going to fire me when they see this. And it weighs on you.
Big law has destroyed my.
I was destroyed in law school, so I think I'm like, you can't destroy me anymore.
You didn't realize law school really juiced me up.
You were good at law school.
I had a great law school experience. I did well. I loved it. And then I just got absolutely annihilated by the big law experience.
I was so beaten down by law school, I was like, can't get any worse.
But I've never been so bad at something that I had to do every day before. I'm so bad at it. And because we're all
but
bad
you wouldn't,
at it,
yeah.
But I'm especially
it's
bad
not just
bad.
You.
I didn't have a finance degree. If you want to do corporate law, I would recommend that you take a finance class before you do it. Because it's, you know, if you've never done it before, it's there's a huge learning curve.
Yeah, it's so
resilience.
One, and then I think the other is you really need to have good social skills. Like, you need to be good at reading people, particularly your bosses. Like you were saying earlier, like you said, your bosses have two different, totally different styles. You really have to, like, study and learn and anticipate how your bosses are going to, A, handle delegation to you of tasks, B, how long they're going to take to read something you send them, and how their feedback is going to be delivered, if it's ever delivered.
Okay.
Constantly analyzing dynamics, and everyone is so different. Like, I almost feel like I'm just reading people a lot.
I have a spreadsheet. Like, as I said, like, being a junior at a big law firm, it's free market. I can work in for any part or any office. We have, like, 10 offices, 1,000 lawyers. So it's, like, totally just fair game, whatever. So I literally keep a spreadsheet of, like, this partner likes, you know,
that's really smart.
I
should do that.
Because I work for so many people in so many groups. Some groups like, and they're so particular. Document IDs. Like,
so you have to put two spaces between every period.
Yeah. And so, which brings me to my number one trait you need to have as a lawyer is attention to detail.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought I had it, but holy shit. Like,
you have to read everything. I read my emails 10 times before I click send.
Same. Especially if I'm doing a distribution to like 50 plus people. Like, I always end up finding.
Because you can send an email that's
completely,
because it's so much easier for me to catch someone else's work.
Totally.
The few times where I've edited someone's work, because I'm pretty junior, so I haven't done that a lot, but if I ever, like, review a first year's work, I feel like I'm so smart. I'm like, this is wrong, because it's not your work, you didn't do it.
Yeah.
You can't see your own mistakes.
You have blind spots to your own mistakes.
So you have so many, it's amazing. I will send a document being like, 100%, that is perfect. It'll come back. Read all over it. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's
like, how
scary.
Did I? It's scary. You don't realize. And so partners always tell me, Amy, what you need to do is you need to draft it. Then you need to take some time away. Then you need to print it out.
Take a
I'm
walk.
Like, bitch, you're thinking everything's a fire drill. Everything is, I need this today. What? So like,
what time do I have to think about it?
Like, these people are delusional with their advice. Ultimately, look who it is.
Oh my God, Amy's dead.
Dad is calling. Yeah. But yeah, so that I would say is the toughest part.
That's very
true. And you're feeling so bad about yourself for making the dumbest mistakes. And in big law, they will tell you.
Oh yeah.
You need to get it together.
I mean, they'll
so,
tell you.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
So do you think your colleagues have imposter, or do they like just look pretty confident?
Probably anyone our age has imposter syndrome. Would you agree?
100%.
I don't think our bosses have it, but because they've been doing it for so long. But I think any associate would have it. I don't see how they couldn't. If you don't, you're probably a sociopath.
Yeah, and I will say too, you know, from my perspective, being in big law, I didn't have a ton of big law offers. I went to like not the best school. This was my only big law offer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel very like Kelsey, we have this common thing where we really care about our jobs and we feel like generally lucky to be not lucky. But like
we worked really hard.
So like I take pride in that. But then, you know, I work with a lot of guys who went to like Northwestern and like these really amazing law schools who like don't feel as lucky to be there because they had a lot of big law offers.
They're just like
they feel entitled to be there. Whereas I feel as a
you feel like you have to prove yourself. Yeah.
I have 13 people that started with me in my job,
mm-hmm.
and so I have the you know Max and Nicks and Brads of the world working in the same position as me, and just the way that they're able to move through the experience and the way that they're, you know, I have friends that'll say, oh yeah, you know, I just didn't get this to this partner, he can wait. I would never.
Oh, that gives me an absolute heart attack.
You know, or like, you know, the types of way they don't, you know, put exclamation points in their emails. We always overthink how we're coming across these guys.
I'm like, should I put an emoji?
Because they feel so entitled to be there, and like, these are also systems that were created
for them. They don't
second
guess
right?
anything they do.
People like Kelsey and I weren't in these jobs 50 years ago.
No.
And so all they did really was take these systems that were designed for white men and just shoved us in there. But these systems were not made for
us. Not fitting in.
No. You know how many paralegals I deal with that are all women that all, you know how nice they communicate? Like smiley face. It's just amazing. The people who feel like they
they're
are
blessed
lucky
to be there,
to be there
yeah.
are so much nicer than the people who feel entitled to be there.
Yeah.
So I work at a real estate company in tech, and I know what you're talking about. So the division managers, regional managers, sometimes I need their approvals for stuff. Like for giving a database to a commercial real estate broker in their area, in their division. So I need three levels of approvals. Regional manager, division manager, and product specialty group director. And some managers, they, like, I just need a word approved. One of them responds yes, or another one responds APP, app. He doesn't even finish the word. So, yeah. And, like,
I've never seen
some
that.
Girls,
well, right, like, then, you know. And
yeah,
I have,
thank you so
like,
much, yeah.
So we have, in our first couple years, we don't have dedicated assistants, but we have, like, a resource center where we can, like, send requests of things we need done. And, like, the way that I talk to those people, I'll, even if they send me something, I always say, like, thank you and stuff.
Oh,
just,
absolutely. This is common decency.
But, I mean, the seniors above me, I mean, first year, first and second year big law associates are treated so poorly. I mean, I feel a lot, talk about something that makes me feel a lot. When someone says thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Or you did, like,
you did a good job.
Once every 3 months.
We start crying.
I'm not joking. Do I get any type of positive
once every fiscal quarter?
But then, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, I'm working for one of usually associates that are anywhere from 3 to 6 years my senior. The way they talk to me is so just, like, mean and demanding. But then always CC'd on their communication with, like, partners.
They're probably so nice. And
so nice. And even to
wow.
the support staff. They're so nice to the
that's
paralegals
foul.
Because the paralegals, they want to buddy up to because they're like.
They want them to be on call for them.
Exactly.
That's, it's so transactional.
But because I'm CC'd on everyone's communication, it's so disgusting to me to see the the variation.
The discrepancy,
just,
yeah.
Like, and there, and let me tell you, there are some mid-level associates in my office who juniors absolutely hate. Like new levels, and all the partners like we love them. I'm like, no shit, because you
they
can make them
like
partner. Why do you
yeah.
think you like them? Like the,
you have
the
all the power.
Red flag.
Yeah.
If juniors hate a mid level, and all the partners are like, you are the worst person. I would just never differentiate the way I communicate with somebody based on
no,
like, never.
That's
it's
psychotic.
Just so, that's why.
It's like
so far. We're built in a day.
Oh, are you
yeah.
saying that I'm going to become the very thing that I'm?
That you
know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
If I ever get like. I mean, just like, I mean, some of the things these farmers say, like, they're so out of touch.
I don't think
that's
a risk.
The things they talk to about, like, over lunch, like, comes just like, they're so out of touch because they just, they've been doing it for 30 years
and they're making
so much money,
millions
they,
of dollars. Yeah. I think that's so interesting. Yeah. You're dealing with a different breed of person.
I've never been, like, my dad always says this to me because my dad's like a big confidant of mine. And he's like, hey, you're punching above your weight. Like, you have to remember, like, you're punching above your weight. Like, this is, you
these
know,
are people
these are
that
people
are just absolutely
just...
ruthless. Yeah. And you don't want to relate to people like that.
No, but I'm
ultimately.
Telling you, being empathetic and being a good person is a massive liability.
Oh, yeah. I honestly, I'll say even in the legal field generally, it's, I mean, I think it's definitely,
it's exactly
it comes
in
out
a big
more
firm
extreme.
Environment,
yeah.
But
even I was talking to Luke's sister about something work-related. She goes, you're a terrible lawyer. Kind of as a joke. She was like, you're too nice.
Yeah, so I was
and I was like, yeah, I know.
I was at a finance conference this past week, and it was a lot of, like, developers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were this one guy was talking to me at, like, a cocktail hour, like, oh, what do you do? He's like, well, you know, we buy these sort of, like, apartment buildings that need fixed up, we fix them up, and then we rent them for a higher price.
Oh.
And
so
I'm so thinking
to
myself,
steal apartments from poor
that,
people.
Exactly. My whole political science brain is thinking, and I said this because, you know.
Why not?
Like, yeah, I was like, well, isn't that bad? Like, don't people need more affordable housing? Like, and
he's
like
yeah, but that's not
he's
how.
He's like, we're making money. Like, these
yeah.
people, I'm just, yes, I come from a place of privilege and that I've never struggled financially to the degree that I'm sure some of these people have, but like, just. They're so focused
but honestly,
on money, and they have enough. It's always, how can I make just a little more money? And that's what finance is, and that's why it's just, it's not intuitive for me, because my brain goes to, like, the greater good and, like, all these
things. Yeah, you're in the wrong profession.
Girl, I know. But I'm telling you, when this guy was telling me, I was like, this is the
what's
problem.
What's the
regenerative all these things. Literally. That would be the most literal worst nightmare. But
I hope it's not his worst nightmare if I do it, because I might do it. That's
well, he was in insurance, my dad, so, you know, he doesn't have a... doesn't take too kindly to the eye attorney. But yeah, so these people, like, that's exactly what I view as, like, a huge problem. Like, there's probably a lot of empty luxury apartments that no one can afford when people
all
just,
of downtown LA,
all downtown LA,
when there's homeless
I
people
would
everywhere.
I would love to know how many of these gorgeous apartment buildings in downtown LA are vacant. because people can't afford
probably
it.
The majority
we need
of
to
that.
Be building housing that's nice and clean, but is not luxury and just like, you know, it's
just the basics.
Yes,
yeah,
so this is why
make
I
it affordable.
Need to get back in politics. This is what I light up talking about. I light up talking about finance. I never will.
You gotta get back into politics.
I know. I want to wear a political label. Oh God, this is gonna air.
No, we didn't reveal your name. Your last name. Going back to your comment about attention to detail, like every decision you make and task that you complete has the potential to be catastrophic.
Totally.
And that is a lot of pressure for me, and probably for most people, but like for me especially, because it's just really hard for me to operate and not be constantly really stressed out, because I could like
everything is high stakes.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way around that.
Totally.
And like at some point you're probably gonna make a catastrophic error. I haven't done it yet.
I am not.
And I need to build resilient skills, because I don't know how I'll recover from
okay,
that.
Well, that's okay. I'll be there for you. Yeah, everybody has a story that like, oh, I sent the wrong like super sensitive document.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm scared of that. Like that's
totally.
It's like any client facing catastrophic error.
100%.
Internal errors. I mean,
no,
today,
it's
but.
a client.
But I will say, I am getting more resilient to people, like, giving me negative feedback and just, like, being generally cunty.
Yeah.
I definitely, like, took it a lot more personally a year ago.
I'm getting
now,
a little
like,
better.
Because now I'm kind of like, look, like, I'm almost a third year. Like, I know I still don't know anything, but, like,
you've been around the block.
I've been around the block a
yeah.
little bit. So, like, I know that a lot of this is just, like, a lot of bark and no bite. And
it's a
like,
lot of projection,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, total. And you know what? One thing I can't stand about what this job is doing to me is like one of the things I hate the most that happens to me is like a mid-level associate who clearly doesn't have anything to say about the document I drafted will point out like really fucking stupid mistakes. Nitpick it and send it back to me. Okay, fine. If you want to do that, you want to be a bitch about it and like say like next time it would be great if you could please like pay more attention.
Like
to
so passive.
I get that all the time. You know what I'll do? And this is so bad. If I see that they have made an error in the
you're
document,
like, oh.
I will literally screenshot it. I will screenshot it, and I will send them an email back, and I will say, hey, and I do it, like, very
subtly,
but like,
yeah.
Is this intentional? I think this might have been, like, an oversight.
That's
just
amazing.
To remind them that,
they're
hey, buddy,
either.
You're human, too, so next time you're giving a junior shit about missing a comma in an entity name, like,
yeah,
clean your shit
down.
Up, too. Yeah, so.
I hate also when people will send you, like, an extremely detailed list of tasks to complete. You do them all. And then they say something like, did you read the instructions? And it's like, yeah, dude, I did.
Yeah, it's condescending, like, things like that.
Like, you're questioning if I read your email telling me what to do.
How
did
the
end result occur if I didn't read it?
Yeah. And it just, to me, if you're...
Like, that's a rhetorical question.
If you're punching down and you're mistreating the person below you, like, I will lose just all respect. I'd rather you be an equal opportunity asshole, be an asshole to the partners, too. Like, to everyone, than, like, selective assholes.
That's terrible.
Really getting, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, then you're just...
It's
all
calculated. Yeah.
Exactly. None
that
of
is
genuine.
You're just a terrible person.
Exactly.
You're using
sorry,
everyone around you.
That's more often than not the type of person.
Yeah.
But I will say, the two groups that I work for now, as I said, one's headed by a female, one's headed by a male, but both, like, great in their own ways. Like, yes, we work hard, but they will say thank you for your hard work.
That's
and
nice.
Just something like that, what I don't understand about some of these big law attorneys is, do you realize that, number one, if you spend 5 minutes on the phone with me explaining the task, because I can't tell you how many times I've asked for phone calls and
they'll just ignore you. Yeah, that happens. I mean,
yeah.
That happens to me too.
If you spend five, I'm a very auditory learner, so
yeah.
I've struggled a lot being a lawyer because you have to read instructions. I get a lot out of a conversation and taking notes.
I'm the opposite. I literally have to ask them 10 times. I hate when people tell me instructions over the phone.
This is why law school is easier for me.
I don't have any auditory learning skills.
Because I could just listen to the lectures and I would know it.
I have to read. I am reading.
Yeah, you always have had like lots of notepads and stuff.
Dude, people will tell me things and I'll literally have to repeat it back to them 5 times just to be like, did I get this correct? And I've learned, originally I would just pretend I knew what they were saying and then I'd be like, fuck. I have no idea what they just told me to do.
I... record calls, and on the first time when something's being explained on a call, I just know, I don't even need to listen, because if I listen, I think my focus is so messed up from Instagram and like TikTok and stuff. I don't need to listen. I would have to just rewatch it, and then everything makes sense in the second time. Second time, the charm. Third time is
well,
better.
Well, see, but that's like a good thing.
That's a good skill.
That's a good skill. Also to know how you learn, right? And by the time you've gotten through law school, you pretty much know how you learn. So I want to tell some of these partners, like, look, dude, if you would just give me 2 fucking minutes of your time, I would give you such a better work product. Like, if you, because I'm telling you, these people will literally.
But they just ignore you. I mean, that happens to me too. I'm like, hey, how do, like.
You know what's happened now? It's so bad since COVID. Like, if I Teams message, you know, a mid-level who, they just gave me an assignment. They know what the call is about. I'll be like, hey, can we, like, have a quick call to go over whatever? And they'll be like, what specifically do you need to discuss? And I'm like, listen, you work for
the whole thing generally?
You work for a big law firm. If I can't pick up the phone and call you because you're, like, you know, off working in some remote location, like, we have an issue, right? Like, I work from home.
You need
to
be available.
I need to be able to talk to you. Just this whole business of, like, there's no mentorship or training or any attempt to it. That's my biggest problem with my experience in law. I feel so dumb because no one's taking the time to explain anything to me.
I think that's
universal.
It's
awful.
I
think is a huge culprit of this, because you have junior associates who, I'm required to be in the office for 7 years, 4 days a week. But you want to know who's not required to be in the office? Anyone fucking else. So they tell us we need to be in the office for mentorship. The floorboards are not mentoring. So I don't know. And then, you know, people are just so protective of their time now. Everyone's just very, like, you know, nobody's reaching out to help you. That's what I'm saying. And, well, like, you got to figure it out. You know?
Yeah. It's kind of you seekers win. No one's going to teach you how to do anything.
No, no.
I did have one really good boss at my last job who would take the time to explain why we were doing things, what the larger picture is.
That's another thing.
And
get, like,
be very detail oriented about, this is the broader scope of why we're doing this, and if you need help, let me know. And that was just really validating, because every other boss I've had, I mean, not to say they're not good bosses, but it's just like, do this, figure it out. Best of luck to you.
Yeah, and I just, you know, even if you ask for feedback, sometimes you won't get it.
Yeah, because everyone's in such a rush that they don't want to bother. I mean, yeah, at my new job, I have gotten, this was a good motion. I could cry.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I, like, busted my ass on, and I had no idea if I was doing it properly. So just
it's
hearing
such a good
it's,
feeling when
it
you
was good,
yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, like, maybe I didn't make a mistake in becoming a lawyer. It's so dramatic, but it's like, it's such high highs and such low lows.
So true.
Because it's mostly lows, unfortunately.
I'm telling you, when I get, like, a great work, I'll, like, screenshot it and send it to my parents and be like, look.
Literally, like, I almost tear up.
Yeah, because there's so little positive reinforcement. Like, so little. And I just don't get that, because I'm, like,
I feel like they just don't have time.
My love language. Like, if you want the best out of me, like, tell me I'm pretty, tell me I'm great, tell me I'm awesome. You know, so
I know what mine is.
What?
Money.
That's your love language?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm talking. Okay.
When I was a kid, it was gifts. It's gifts. Or it's gifts and money. So, Luke, listen up.
Keep knows
it. Oh, my God.
Mine is
actually
active service. Yeah. What's your love language?
Active service.
Okay. Mine's words of affirmation, which I feel like
is
not popular.
No, I feel like that's pretty.
Really? I feel like quality time is a big one.
Quality time for me too.
That's probably, like, the lowest on my run.
We know.
Like,
I know.
It's like, how come you never want to hang out? I'm like, why would we need to hang out?
I love you.
I love you.
But, like, we don't have to.
You are very.
I am.
In how little quality time.
I am a very.
You're a black cat.
I'm a lone wolf.
You know the golden retriever black cat? Like, you are a black cat.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm just like a thief in the night.
You know?
Thief in the night. Running through the street.
What's your acts of service?
Yeah. Like.
So what's, like, the thing
value
that makes you feel the most loved?
A romantic gesture, like something that I don't need to do myself.
So, like, someone taking out your trash for you?
Or
dinner, like, I get home and dinner's already there. Just, like, some sort of value into my life.
Mm-hmm.
Not material value, but.
Like, taking
effort.
Take your effort away.
This is what a manifesto.
And then gifts for them. And then I just need to be told, like, I'm great. Yeah. Sometimes before I go to bed, I ask my boyfriend to say,
aww.
I know.
That's really cute.
Like,
what is this?
No, that's really
love
cute.
It.
I feel like guys is usually touch.
Yeah. No, I would say his is quality time. Like, I was just telling Kelsey, not complaints. He has a qualm about me traveling.
Yeah, I feel like I'm trying to be more...
You've been trying for years to be more like...
Well, I'm trying to be more just nice.
I know. Do you remember that time when we went out to dinner and then you were like, Luke's going to be so shocked that you like brought him some food.
I brought
food.
Him food up.
And she was like, Luke's going to be shocked that I'm bringing him food right now.
I know. I feel like such an asshole, but like I'm genuinely...
You show
I'm
your
love
so, in
me. I'm just like very in my head. All the time.
You're just not thinking about
I'm
it.
I'm so in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I'm literally just
you're
off in my own little world.
If he's out without you, he asks you if you want something from their restaurant?
Sometimes. And I've gotten a lot better about it. He's a lot more romantic and thoughtful than me. I'm kind of a piece of shit.
it's weird. You're not an only child. You are, like, brought up to think about
But Kelsey
others.
Has such, not only child like, energy, she's such a lone wolf. And I'm kind of a lone wolf in some ways.
I,
that's definitely why we
even though I had three younger siblings, like, I was always on my own.
He talked about that in one of the episodes.
Yeah.
I remember
you
saying because, like, your brother.
I've just
like,
always, they were their own little team.
Yeah.
I've always been like this. It's weird. It's like there's like a force field around me.
Yeah,
and
it's
like
hard to penetrate.
I'm just there.
I think of myself as an extrovert. Freudian slip. I think of myself as an introvert.
You're an introvert?
People have that reaction to me. Like the guy
I think
that,
you're
the guy I'm dating.
Extrovert
is,
and introvert? Or
you're an introvert, right?
Yeah. I don't know what I am.
I think you're an extrovert.
But you like alone time.
I've gotten way more extroverted recently.
Yeah.
I've gotten way less.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I've gotten way less extroverted. I worked in restaurants for a long time.
I think we've
years.
Just seen so much shit.
And
Veronica and me, we're just like, we're done
yeah,
with everyone.
Yeah, your Cheesecake Factory stories are some of my favorites.
Like,
yeah.
it took me, I think, 3 years after stopping to work in a restaurant to realize that my notion of this idea that I had that I hate people has become obsolete.
Yeah.
Because I've seen too much. Like, I can't say that people were rude to me while I was working in restaurants, but they were just annoying.
Yeah.
I just seen people.
You see the worst of humanity.
Like, the last year that I was working, I just maxed out with patience. If somebody, like, raises their hand. So, yeah, but when somebody, like, it's not the best way to signal to your waiter, but if somebody raises their hand, like, it's acceptable. I hated this. Who are you?
Like, why are you flagging me
down?
I understand that
I'm in this position right now where I have to help you out and be patient, but I'm just not about it. So, yeah, and then now I kind of, my mind is has cleaned itself from memories of how people act in restaurants, so now I don't hate people anymore.
You've recovered from the...
I think so.
Yeah.
From seeing them in their not best forms.
But people have that reaction when I say I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, the guy I'm dating, like, supposedly he is an extrovert, and he spends more alone time than me. He says I'm with somebody all the time. Like, I have plans with
I feel like you
time.
Are
like-
introverted in a sense, though, because you... I mean, we're, like, in constant communication pretty much, and, like, you and I both spend a lot of time, like, we're all through, I'm in constant communication with you and you, pretty much. I know you spend a lot of time alone, and
I spend a lot of
time
alone.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you live with someone, you probably spend the least amount of time alone.
Yeah, I do.
But you spend a lot of time just with Luke, not, like, without being
single. But
I don't have a, like, live-in boyfriend, I feel like it does force me to have to, like, seek out more social situations, or I'll just be alone.
Yeah, he's like, why don't you want to go do things? Dude, I'm tired.
I know. I mean, being
hard
to our jobs back to the law. It's very draining.
Very draining.
I mean, I will say, when I started as a lawyer, it was the first time where I felt that need to blow off steam, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can attest to this. Like, I didn't party in law school. I mean, I partied more in the last year and a half than in the law.
Like,
yeah.
you get done with work, you're like,
I literally
want
to go to the club. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because sleep's not going to overcharge. Like, I need to, like...
All have nightmares about work.
I need to, like, be in a place where I'm just completely in, like, a different environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
but do you still think about work when you're at the club? Because I do.
Okay, here's what I always say to people. Friday nights are really tough for me to go out. I usually
yeah.
don't have good nights on Friday nights.
No.
Because I'm not...
Worried. You're taking all the stress from the day
and
into
right,
your
so
night.
I'm not my best self. Like,
yeah.
So I really,
and you don't have sufficient time to get ready.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm always rushed. I'm always late. Because Friday night, I mean, there's just always shit going on. But last night, I worked till, like... 2 a.m. I mean, it's just so.
What time is the place to close to Chicago?
Four. Chicago is still. I mean, listen.
LA would be too powerful if everything was up until 4. The city would be on fire.
Yeah, honestly, it's true.
It would be amazing though.
I mean, I feel like LA.
It was good for you, but
the underground and like afters, you just have to like get more involved in that.
Yeah,
which I mean, I don't. really do here, but yeah, shows here end really early, but clubs in Chicago stay up until like 4.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's the first time, like, being a lawyer is the time, like, that I felt the need to be outside the house in a big way. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I never felt so much stress.
I really see why people have drinking problems and substance abuse problems.
And me not drinking as a lawyer, we could do a whole episode on that.
Girl, I'm about to go on my first firm conference in Vegas not drinking.
Not drinking, because the last time we drank was, like, I mean, it's been a while.
Like 7 months.
Oh, my God. I think I told you I was going to get you a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're two sober lawyers, guys. You're getting like
well,
a very unique
California sober.
California
as they
sober.
Say. But yeah, it's weird. I get done with a hard day and I'm like, I wish I wanted to drink.
Yeah, I feel that.
But it's like it's nice though to not resort to that because it's like I feel like I've hacked myself.
Drinking culture in the law is high. I mean, people just drink so much. It's.
I mean, a big part of the reason I stopped drinking, which this will be a separate episode, but like, I get Sunday scaries on Saturday. I told her I got Sunday scaries on Friday night. Like, this is how bad it is to the point that like dealing with hangover anxiety,
yeah,
it literally made me want to crawl into a hole and die.
Yeah, I always tell people the key to my life, the only way it works is that I don't drink.
Yeah.
I don't want to, first of all, but also if I did, I mean, I work 65 hours.
It's like
I refuse to not go out on weekends.
It's
so
impossible.
If I'm drinking, I don't function. Like,
no,
you would
literally go. You would dissolve.
Your skin, I've been looking at it. Your skin is like flawless.
Oh,
yeah,
so
it's just so no. Your skin tone is so
both you
like,
girls
even.
Both you girls.
I mean,
need to drop your routine.
Thank you. I've been drinking red wine in the past few days, and like I can see.
Okay, I will say. Okay,
but
the last time I got drunk, which. Was like,
didn't you have like two?
Two espresso martinis. I swear to God. The next
I think
day,
you're
I
allergic
see.
To alcohol because
really?
That's like not
dude,
normal. Two drinks. She was like in bed, like I can't move.
I mean, the last time that I drank with any regularity was like
in college. Yeah.
And even I mean, I just remember struggling so much with my relationship with alcohol. Number one, because I dated an alcoholic and lived with an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And then two, just me not liking alcohol, living in a Midwestern city.
Where that's all people do.
That's all people do. It, I mean, not drink, as I said, I could do a whole.
Yeah, this is a whole.
Drinking.
It's crazy how it's such a huge part.
You don't realize how big a part of it, like, day-to-day life it is.
Until
you
stop.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Because people are so
people get very
fascinated
offended.
And curious and almost off-put.
They get very defensive.
So especially because I'm slim, so it's like, oh, you must just be really healthy. I'm like, no. I'll,
yeah,
I don't,
people
I,
ask me, oh, are you doing for your health?
No,
I'm like,
I'm
do it so I don't literally off myself.
It's,
so,
I, mean, it's
I guess that's
like it. They cannot, they're, like, people glitch when I say I don't like alcohol. It's like, it
yeah.
doesn't
compute. I wish I didn't like
it. In Russia, it's, like, really,
yeah,
Russia, obviously, it's
not
really
if
weird.
I was a Russian not drinking, they would,
yeah.
like, look at me, like.
If people, like, don't trust you if you don't drink.
Thank you
like,
so much. That's exactly what I've been trying to articulate. People don't trust you when you don't drink. It's so true.
Well, I think it. People project a lot
they
because
do.
I think a big conversation that I have with people when I stopped drinking, and it was dramatic because like I went from drinking a lot and everyone seeing me as like a big partier to not drinking at all. So it's like what
that's
happened.
True. That's a unique
everyone, experience. Everyone's reaction is what happened. I think people think, did you get a DUI? Did you go to jail? Did you like ruin your life?
Because a lot of times that's what it takes for people
yeah.
to stop. But you're fortunate enough that you didn't wait for something
yeah.
like that to happen.
Yeah.
You just like.
I just got tired of my own bullshit, basically. But
you
people get,
straw,
people
so speak,
get very, very, like, defensive about it. And they go, well,
defensive.
Well, I only have, like, a glass of wine. I'm like, I'm not saying anything about
thank
you.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're finally.
No, it's very
that.
Weird.
They get very, they, like, look, when I say I don't drink, then they start analyzing their own drinking habits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you know, I've been trying to really drink a lot less, too. I'm like, and I always have to say some form of a joke of, like, no, you know, I have other vices. Like,
yeah.
I'm not holier than thou.
You
want to
make them feel comfortable.
Exactly,
yeah.
Because I feel like then they think that I'm some, like, stiff who, like, probably only eats,
like
you know,
vegan
like
or something.
Vegan. Yeah, like, dude, no, like, I
only drink kale smoothies.
Yeah, no, and you know that is not true. Like,
you should just be like, I love Chick-fil-A.
I'm a McDonald's girl.
Yeah, like, I drink Sprite every day.
Yeah, it's just, like, perfect.
It is weird. It is an industry where, like,
oh my
I'm
God.
Very curious to see how this retreat goes. Because
yeah,
it's going to be bizarre.
Yeah.
I've also
gonna,
never been
dude,
to Vegas
shit,
not drinking.
The shit that I've seen at, like, because the thing about me that's unique is I don't drink, but
so
I
she
still
sees
party.
Everything.
I see everything. And that also puts
and
do
you remember everything?
Because everybody's fucked up. no one's gonna remember.
Amy's just collecting the black book. She's gonna expose everyone.
No, people get in their heads. I mean, anxiety is already so bad, and then you remember somebody was sober there seeing you act like that.
I think I'm just gonna, at this retreat, like, not broadcast I don't drink and just
don't,
like,
get a Sprite. I do it all the time. I get a Sprite
and
ask.
And then if people ask me, I'll tell the truth, but I'm not gonna, like, broadcast it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
ladies, I think we've covered pretty much your law careers from the very beginning when this crazy idea came to your head, and then you were nice enough to tell me, like, your journey step by step. I think what I want to know is if you have a crazy case story. I don't know if it really applies to you.
It doesn't. So this is not real.
I have one.
You didn't realize you have you don't have a standard law day to day.
I don't.
So maybe Kelsey has one.
I don't know if I call this crazy. It's just absolutely absurd. And it's also absurd how much time of my life it took up at my last job. Amy, I don't think you've been blessed with this story
yet. Okay, I was about to say, do I know?
So I had a case, which I can't obviously say names because it's an active case, but a large college that owns medical facilities rented out a unit below the college's medical facility to another medical provider. And in that lower level medical facility that was renting from the college,
like physically
there was
beneath
physically,
it?
Physically, third floor,
mm-hmm.
The college facility was the fourth floor. In this facility, there was a multi-million-dollar surgical robot. Someone flushed the toilet in the unit above the unit where the surgical robot was, flooded, murdered the robot, millions of dollars. Of damages. No, it's hilarious.
Well, just the way you said murder the robot.
Murdered it.
The robot did not
drown
survive.
It in cold blood.
Okay.
And so the college was sued. I represented the client.
The who?
The college who owned the building.
You represented the defendant.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, because you do mostly defendants.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole question of this, and a bunch of parties got involved in this case, like the management companies, the property managers, the security companies, the maintenance companies, multi-party, very confusing, complicated case that's been going on for years. The entire
basically, the question is, whose fault is it?
Who flushed the toilet?
Oh, shut up! But why does
I
that matter? But why does that matter? Tell
because
me why.
That's whoever flushed the toilet was liable for the flood and the damage. It's ridiculous.
That actually makes, is that really what the loss is?
I mean, it's arguable.
That's highly upsetting if that's the case.
Well, I don't think there's case law about flushing a toilet.
No,
or that
like
might
about
be
liability,
case.
About who's liable for, that's
well,
got to be like a, that's got to be like a, you know.
Well, no, there was a clog in the toilet and someone flushed it anyway. And like,
okay.
There was plumbers involved. It was.
So the case that they're choosing to build is negligence around the flusher because of the additional
yes.
fact that it was plumbed. Should I be a litigator? This is interesting.
So it is kind of interesting,
yeah.
But it was so stupid.
So who flushed the fucking
they
toilet?
No one knows. There's literally no records of it. Like, the parties just kept serving discovery on each other, trying to figure out
who
flushed the
toilet.
No one knows. And at a certain point, like, my boss was telling me to just, like, keep going and, like, keep looking for more information. I'm like, there's no more information to uncover.
Wait a second. How do they know that it was caused? They know for a fact it was caused by someone flushing the toilet.
Yeah. But can you believe this? I kept, and every time, I was dealing with it every fucking day.
Just
and
flushed
I,
can you imagine your, like, that's.
And I literally was like, I can't believe I went to law school for this.
Oh, I have moments. My job is so administrative. I do such mind-numbing work. I'm like, I cannot believe I went to school for this.
No, it's absurd. And this one's funny. I mean, I have other cases that are a lot darker and more, like, serious than that. But that one's just comical. And then the funniest part of it all was the paralegal who was on this case with me and just in the trenches with me, she left that firm prior to me leaving that firm. And one day we were texting, catching up. She goes, how's that poopy pants case? I was like, I hate you.
Dude, how have you never told me this story?
Because it's just, now you got it live. I should have sent you a voice memo about it,
you
though.
See, I'm going
to I'll get back on the voice memos.
Thank
I honestly,
really
I know we're just so busy. I'm like, I don't even bother with them anymore. But I will
I
do it.
Want
I will do
podcast.
It.
Also, sometimes Kelsey has her phone on Do Not Disturb for so
like
long.
Like, all the time.
Anyway.
Honestly, do what you gotta do, girl.
No, you're good. We
no,
I mean,
she texts me three times and
yeah.
I disturb her.
I still check my phone.
No, you do. You're good. Sometimes we'll text for a long time in the middle of the
I'll
night.
Turn my boss. I'll turn my bosses are all on. Like, obviously, they're not on Do Not Disturb, but sometimes I get nervous. Like, what if someone from work calls me? So I do check, and I'm not. They're not saved. I do check it kind of a lot, but sometimes I go like hours without checking.
If I'm doing Do Not Disturb right now, how many times would I just check my phone?
Okay, yeah.
I almost check it. Sometimes I think
check
it
more
because I'm like,
yeah.
It's unknown. But we probably have to wrap up soon. But I want to just give some advice to anyone who's thinking about going to law school.
Yes, please do.
Oh yeah,
so,
that's great. Yeah.
Everyone told me this advice. Did I listen to it? No. So I urge you, my dear listeners, if you are considering going to law school, please
heed
take
our
my
warning.
Advice, because everyone will tell you this, and you will be like, fuck you, I don't want to listen to this, I'm going to do what I want, which is exactly what I did, and now I look back like, wow, those people had some great points. A, if you do not have a rich family, do not go to law school. Take it from me. B, work at a law firm first, if you are going into litigation. If you want to be a transactional attorney, I have no idea what to tell you, Amy. I'll leave that to Amy. But if you're thinking about becoming a litigator, go. I don't know what you can do necessarily. Go be a secretary. I don't think you can be a law clerk because I think you have to be in law school to do that. Be a secretary. Clean the toilets there. Just don't flush the toilets there.
Don't flush the toilets.
But do something where you're exposed to that environment and see if you generally like the vibe there.
Go on jury duty.
Yeah, Veronica knows more than all of us here.
Voir dire.
Voir dire. She's a voir dire. I was shook.
Also, set aside a lot of time to really think about it. Don't do it on a whim. Don't do it because you think you're going to make a lot of money, because you will probably eventually make a lot of money, but it will take time. You're not going to come out the gates and be making a lot of money unless you can get a big law job, which only a very small percentage of people get.
Can I also say there's a lot easier ways to make money? Like, the thing about being a lawyer that you have to understand is you are paid for your time. We are dealing in the billable hour. I make X amount of dollars an hour, which means I have to work that hour to get paid. There are a lot of There's no shortcuts. So if you want to have a cushy job where you're making a lot of money and you're not working a lot of hours, you're in the wrong.
This is not going to happen.
You're paid for
you.
Your time. Whereas, like, if you become an entrepreneur, you become, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Is, like,
go work in finance.
Go work in finance, but not in finance law. Because, again, you're only paid when you're working.
In every,
there's a lot of more jobs that have passive income. There's no passive income.
Every 6 minutes of your time is tracked in 6 minute increments.
Sure.
So everyone in the firm can look at every little task you did, how long it took you, how many hours you worked that day. I also, this probably happens to you, when I'm off the clock, well, I'm never like truly off the clock, but when I'm doing something where I'm not working, I literally think, how long is this taking me? And then I realize, oh, I don't need to be billing this because this is just my life. That is disturbing and upsetting to me.
Yeah, because you're constantly, I mean, that's a whole lot of it.
I'll sometimes be like, I need to be timing this, and then I'll be like, wait, shit, this is my life. I need to be timing it. Like, it's fucked up.
I think it's easier for litigators to go. That's my personal opinion. We are dealing with so many, like,
yeah, you, I mean,
so
you talking about chasing down work, like, that's never something I had to do, because we just have piles of work on us constantly. So
yeah,
everything I do is billable.
Yeah. No, I spend so much fucking time building my brand network.
Yeah,
and
that's
just, like, doing
really
money.
Stressful.
Oh,
I just go, if I'm talking to someone about a case, I'll just say strategize case.
Because in big law, like, when they don't fire you, they'll just stop giving you work. You won't hear out.
You get soft fired.
Yeah. They just stop giving you work. It's like, it's very toxic. The nice thing about big law and the reason why I moved across the country to get the big law job is because once you're in, it's like,
you're set for life. Yeah.
I mean, unless you get a really bad reputation and move around
a
lot. Like, now that I have one big law job under my belt, it's going to be a lot easier.
And the rest of us are like, maybe one day.
Well, you need to, I told you this. Right now in corporate, it's so slow. You need to wait for like a COVID bump. They were hiring a bunch of people. But right now.
Do you
now,
think they ever hire litigators though?
Oh yeah, that's true.
Okay. Honestly, I've accepted like I'm going to be a litigator.
Well, then
until I go in-house.
You just need to have a connection.
Or do something completely
different.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, she's going to get there. But, I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
I'm working
at this point. I'm working so much.
You
I
might
just,
as well.
I need to make enough money to justify how much I work.
And I will say, anyone who's considering law school, particularly big law, just know the odds that you're going to be passionate about your job are very slim, and you need to view your job as a means to have the life that you want. And
also, money isn't everything. If you want to go be a public defender,
really?
More power to you. Amy and I are just, we like nice things, and don't hate on us for that. That's just who we are. And that's how it is.
And golden handcuffs are extremely real, you know, from my perspective.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't see how they...
From second to third, could not be. Your salary goes up so much, and then it's like, where are you going to get another job?
Yeah.
So, and they know it.
Yeah.
Podcaster.
They do.
So please subscribe.
Amy's dad, thanks for listening.
Thanks, Dad. I love
you.
I love you. I've been ignoring his calls, so...
What a way to wrap up.